This is the Livestream Final Fantasy Podcast, episode number 14 for January 14th, 2016. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Livestream Final Fantasy Podcast. I am Mike Ficklin, also known as VaderSW1 on the forums, and joining me on this mythic quest into all things Final Fantasy are Jason Tandro.
SpongeBob SquarePants!
Lex!
Hey!
And Ryu Shikaze!
Drop on the deck and flop like a fish!
Jesus. Basically, what this show will be about is for an hour or so, or actually as we figured out now, is for or so, every few weeks, we will discuss all things Final Fantasy and Final Fantasy related. We'll hit upon recent news and notes and delve into a different topic of discussion each episode. Have a recommendation for something we should discuss? Feel free to hit us up at lifestreampod@gmail.com or comment on the episode posts on the forums each week. So, how's it going, fellas?
Oh, it's been awesome. Me and Tim are done FF3 for one thing. Are you done FF3,
Mike? Whoa, wait. Oh, we're going to get to that.
Oh, we are? Oh, okay, yeah, good. Yeah. I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yes. We'll go ahead and open up with a bit of news and notes here. We'll start off with what I feel like is the biggest news. Final Fantasy IX is coming to Steam and smartphones. Square released a nifty little trailer announcing that. I know many have long been awaiting Final Fantasy IX to finally come to the PC, so one of them is Lex. Lex, how are you feeling about this?
I'm so excited to see it released on PC, only because it increases the potential consumer base for that game, and it's an amazing game.
Agreed.
And also, this was so unexpected, because...
I love that they warned for partial nudity in the trailer. Which it's technically true, but it's not what you're thinking. They're talking about the villain.
All right. Does he even appear in the trailer?
No, but they're talking about the game, and they're basically warning you, hey, guess what? The villain's basically naked.
With a big furry...
Actually, so is the main character at times.
I'm going to be honest, I didn't notice any of that my very first time through the game. I don't know if it was my innocent child brain, but I did not ever notice what Kuja's actually wearing, and it wasn't until years later when people were like, oh my god, Kuja's so weird, what the hell, that I was like, that's odd. But I never noticed that when I was a child.
So would it be safe to assume, Lex, that you will be picking this up?
I will 100% buy it. One thing I was going to say is that it's really strange that they've gone ahead and released this, because, or ported it, I should say, because 7 and 8 were both ported. 9 was never... The reason 7 and 8 have recently come out in PC is because it was easy for them to do, and they had been ported way back in 1998.
Right.
So it's like in 99 for Final Fantasy VIII. So it's really bizarre that they've just kind of gone, oh, let's just port 9 now, you know, a few years after they've re-released those. And I'm actually quite excited to dive into the file system and see how it's all structured, because I used to be a member of the modding community over at Quim.com for Final Fantasy 7 and 8, and I'm familiar with how, you know, mods work and how the game's file structure looks. So I really want to see how they've dealt with Final Fantasy 9, because that had a different data structure on the PlayStation than Final Fantasy 7 and Final Fantasy 8. So they really, they must have... This is a ground-up port, do you know what I mean? It's obviously right. Not like a remaster or anything, but I'm really excited
so
to see how it plays and how it looks.
They upscaled some of the graphics based on the trailer.
They have 100% definitely redone the character models. They haven't redone them to the point where they're absolutely HD, because they would look out of place with the backgrounds if they'd done that. And they have applied a filter to all of the 2D backgrounds, which in some instances doesn't look good, in some instances it looks fine. But I'm just really hoping that the, you know, the character models don't stand out too harshly from the background, but that's always unavoidable when it comes to these PlayStation games.
Yeah. So this is making me think, because I'm very strongly convinced that Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles is built using the same basis as Final Fantasy IX, due to a number of obviously shared assets, I'd love to see that come out for Steam with an online multiplayer aspect.
Yeah, didn't we have some listener feedback that mentioned that here just a couple episodes ago?
I think we did.
Yep. We also had a very interesting situation arise here with our good friend Lightning from Final Fantasy XIII.
oh, God.
Apparently, Lightning has taken it upon herself to begin endorsing Louis Vuitton. and she even gives a interview about which is priceless.
It is so very heavily made up of in-game quotes that it's ludicrous. Well,
and a cleverly snuck in Rocky IV reference.
Oh, yes. And of course, for all you playing at home, it has the definitive proof that she's going to be in the remake of Final Fantasy VII, because she says a world of strife.
Don't fucking,
and as we all know from Half-Life, any time that 1+2 equals 3, Half-Life 3 is confirmed.
So I mean, on a just ignoring the fact that Lightning gives this kayfabe interview for Louis Vuitton, how do we feel about the fact that Square is actually allowing one of its characters to go into the fashion realm?
They did this with Prada years ago, which everyone forgets. The Final Fantasy XIII characters have all been modeled wearing Prada.
There's also nothing ridiculously either out of the, you know, the realm or even all that strange, because many years ago, actually about 16 years now, I think. Maybe, no, a little later than that. But JoJo's Bizarre Adventure did a cross-promotion with Gucci, which was amazing.
Interesting.
I mean,
I'll see if I can find that.
I don't have a problem with this. I think it's pretty cool. In some senses, I do think it's pretty cool. I think the backlash is from the kind of insecure members of gaming fan base who are a bit like,
agreed.
How dare this pop culture collide with my fringe culture?
Yeah, well, it feels like the backlash is kind of like Gamergate. it really does have that feeling. It's like, come on.
Yeah, people are just kind of moaning for no reason, to be honest.
Agreed.
I don't welcome to
like,
the internet.
Care for it. I'm not like super excited, but I'm not gonna be like, oh my god, how terrible. You know, it's like I think it's something I have absolutely zero care for. I have no fucks like, about this.
I had the same reaction. But I was just a bit like, what the hell are they doing? And then I was like, oh well, you know.
Yeah, I can honestly say that I didn't give two fucks about it when I first saw the initial ad with her on there. I'm like, oh great, moving on. But after Lex introduced me to the kayfabe interview, that's what really got me going on it. The interview's really, really, it's to me, it's worth reading. It's got some very funny moments. So I will definitely be linking up the interview in the show notes here. It's worth the read.
I laughed the whole way through it. I was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Because it's in a UK newspaper. And I just found it on the Telegraph. It's in the Telegraph. Found it on the Telegraph website, and I was like, "Why are they covering this?" I said, like, "I don't think they've ever mentioned Final Fantasy in like a major UK newspaper before, aside from the 7 remake when it was announced." And I was reading this Telegraph article, and I was like, "Oh no, oh my god, this is fucking hilarious!" I just couldn't stop laughing the whole way through reading it.
I thought it was very cheeky. So they did a good job with it. They did a good job with it. Next piece of news that I saw, and this one's kind of a downer, it's kind of sad. I saw Square Enix as closing Shinra Technologies. For those that aren't familiar with what Shinra Technologies is, It was basically going to be Square's cloud gaming company spinoff. Apparently, it was reported to have lost, I think I read, 15 million yen, which is crazy, especially given the fact that I really don't think that they did anything. So, nope. I guess certainly understandable that, or why Square would want to shut him down, so...
I think 13 was streamable to smartphones and tablets through that service in Japan.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure. I know that 13 used a cloud streaming service to work on tablets and phones in Japan. I'm not sure if it was that one, but it would make sense if it was that one, so...
Yeah, I mean, just on a personal level, I mean, my hope for Shinra Technologies was that it was going to take off, and that eventually all of the Final Fantasy universe could be found in their cloud gaming, and we'd be able to eventually stream it to our phones, our tablets, you know, whatever, wherever we go. So just a little disappointing, a little disheartening to see it close down. So
I think like why it failed though is something that Square Enix needs to look at, because I would hazard a guess, and I don't know this, but I would hazard a guess that it failed because nobody knew about it. Because when I found out it closed, I remember I read it in a thread, I opened the thread, and then I vaguely remembered, oh yeah, 2 years ago, I read that they were opening this, and this is the next time I've heard about it, that it's closing. So there was zero use of it, as far as I know, in the West, at least.
Right.
They didn't put it to any use. They never talked about it. So yeah. How are people going to know? They never put, like, they could have put every single FF game on there and had them available for all smartphones and devices. Do you know what I mean? They could even have made an app for PS4. Yes. So that people could, like, pay, I don't know, £2 a month or something to be able to play Final Fantasy games, who knows? But they never did anything with it. So I really think they've only got themselves to blame. The only thing that concerns me is... they said it was an extraordinary loss, which in business terms, I'm told, does not mean, like, it's not a catastrophic thing. It just means a loss that they weren't expecting.
Right.
But initially I was like, oh, I don't want them to lose more money because they're going to go under. And
yes. But I mean, it's another failed venture, sort of like the film, their short-lived film company. So.
And the original 14.
Oh, well, yes, that too. So moving on from that to a little bit of more brighter news. Square Enix did take to the Final Fantasy XV forums, and they answered the top three questions that were voted for on the Final Fantasy XV forums. There's some pretty interesting information that was given out on that. They answered questions in terms of how the different difficulty modes would affect things like XP gain, enemy stats, damage, and the artificial intelligence. They also answered very vaguely how much of the big cities like Altesia and Insomnia that we'll be able to look through. They also answered a question as to if larger buildings will have multiple warp points for Noctis. Some really interesting information given. They didn't dive into a great deal of detail, but there was some interesting information given. And I will post a link in the show notes to that because I do think it's definitely worth the read.
For sure.
Was there anything in any of those answers that they gave that you guys found super interesting?
Yes, but I'm going to let the other guys talk for a bit and then chime in because I've been doing a lot of talking.
I have yet to read it, to be honest, though, of the questions asked. I know, right? But, I mean, because, again, honestly, I'm kind of just at this all up in the air. But of the questions asked, the one that interests me the most would be the one about the multiple warp points, because I just get this image of him like warping up to the top of this tower in some grand Advent Children-y kind of way to kill a boss. You know, that'd be awesome.
You're able to do that in battles, but not outside of battle.
Right, so you can't use warp points when you're outside of battle.
Yep, that's the case.
Well, that's what I was talking about. I was talking about in a boss, like just
That's
so speaking of outside of battles, I'm curious to see how big their cities are, especially because this is going to be an open world exploratory sort of thing, and it's always interesting to see how well or how badly those go.
They said Altissia, the developers still get lost in Altissia.
Yes,
so that's actually
that put a big ass smile on my face, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, that because that reminds me of how large the cities felt in Final Fantasy 12, because I felt like I got lost in Final Fantasy 12 quite a bit. And awesome.
12 didn't even actually have all that large of cities. It just had a good faking it. But I think that 15's actually going to have large cities, like at least GTA scale cities.
Especially if it still doesn't have a minimap in the final version, because that's something that I'm struggling with when I played episode Dusky.
Yeah. Have you played episode Dusky 2.0?
Yes, I have now. I actually finished a playthrough of it for the first time yesterday.
Do you feel like the changes they made were positive?
Oh yeah, very much so. They added a dodge. They made movement feel a bit more fluid and less kind of stuttery.
Agreed.
Jumping around is the same as it was. What else have they changed? They added character specific quests, so that when you camp at a campsite, you get a new. In the morning, you know, like one of your party members will approach you and say, oh, do you want to go off and do this for the day? And they have their own dialogue between each other. And that was really cool. So, yeah, I think the changes were excellent.
Yeah, and I actually think that actually helps build relationships for you in the storytelling. And it makes you care about the side characters. So,
for sure.
Yeah. Agreed. So yeah, like I said, I will link up to the discussion there on those questions that Square answered, because, like I said, there is some pretty interesting information that they gave. So definitely worth your time to read those. Next piece of news I have is something is a matter of pride, and I think it should be a matter of pride for all of us that work very hard for the live stream. The livestream.net website and this very podcast you are listening to have been nominated for Best Final Fantasy Non-Wiki Website and Best Final Fantasy Podcast, respectively, by Ultima Final Fantasy Podcast. So I thought that was really, really cool of Joe and Caleb to do that. I am a regular listener of their show, and it was I was quite surprised to hear that we were up for the awards there. So
yeah,
that's very cool. That's very cool of them. And big shout out to Joe and Caleb at Ultima Final Fantasy. And I would encourage all of you, all of our listeners, to please go to www.ultimafinalfantasy.com and cast your votes for us. We'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe and Caleb. As the site director of TLS Livestream.net, I am very happy. I'm a happy boy.
And as the resident egomaniac, I take all the credit.
And as the most obnoxious one, I thank you as well.
Next piece of news here, I was just going to go through real quick and give a quick update on the Livestream Final Fantasy Podcast Final Fantasy Retrospective series. And I think I can speak for Ryu and JT when I say, yes, finally fucking finished. Yeah,
we done.
Yeah, Final Fantasy. Yeah. I think we're all finished with Final Fantasy 3, so
I'm nearly done with 4.
Yeah. Ryu and JT actually both decided to get a jump start on Final Fantasy 4, so
because it's Final Fantasy 4, dude.
I'm probably also gonna play the DS version.
Oh, are you gonna do both?
Yeah.
Nice. So for those that aren't quite sure what we're referring to, Ryu, I believe, is playing the PSP version of Final Fantasy IV.
I'm currently playing the PSP version.
Yep.
That's basically the better graphics version of the GBA quasi-remake. It's basically the exact same game until you get to the very end, and then they added some stuff on. whereas the DS version is a complete remake and a completely different animal.
Yeah, I will be steering clear of the DS remake. I played it once, and I have no desire to ever play it again, so...
It Ditto. Is going to kick your ass, and you're just going to have to kick its ass right back. it literally is, it is a Final Fantasy IV for people who were sick of playing the same Final Fantasy IV, basically. So it's to give you an actual challenge.
So real quick, just to tie up on Final Fantasy III, Ryu, you asked me a while back what level my characters were at. When you asked me that, it dawned on me all of a sudden that I had forgotten one side quest. I had completely forgotten the Iron Giant battle.
Ah, yes.
So, I spent a whole bunch of time leveling my characters up, and I actually got them all to level 99 and level 99 Onion Knights. And the Iron Giant still kicked my ass about 6 times. And then I finally was able to sneak out a victory.
Yep.
Pray tell, Iron Giant, I didn't fight them.
He is an asshole optional boss who's under the ocean.
Yes. So you had... I don't know how they did the side quests in the PSP port, but on the DS version, you had to send emails through the Mognet to... Prince Alice and the four old men, and eventually it opens up the side quest where you fly the Nautilus. I believe it's just a little bit east of the floating continent.
And, there's a very small triangular island that has a cave on its south side underwater.
Yes. And when you go in there, really there's two reasons to go into that cave. Number one, yes, the first reason is to fight the three different dragons that's in that cave, because they have a chance of dropping some of the best equipment in the game for the Onion Knight job. So they drop, I can't remember which dragon drops which, but one of them drops the onion armor, one of them drops the onion sword, and one of them drops, I believe, like the onion shield, I think is what it drops. And so... That's reason number one. Reason number two is to fight the optional boss, who is a bastard. Yeah, so I, after being killed about 6 times, I did finally eke out a victory on him. And then I advanced on and wiped the floor with Cloud of Darkness, and off to Final Fantasy IV. I will be going shortly.
Yep.
Yeah, I can only imagine how well you fared, considering I absolutely destroyed it my party, and they were only at 62 by the end of it all.
I killed her before I realized I killed her, because I was similarly overleveled. I was running with a party of, instead of with Onion Knights, just because I think it's a little dull to run the end game with Onion Knights. Like, they're great, but I just find it, they're great at that level.
I was going to say, it's really not a challenge once you hit 90, job level 99 and your characters are actually level 99. It's really not a challenge at that point.
But no, like, I was, because I just, and I was not that high of level when I actually first fought her. And I went back and did it later, and it was, you know, oh, I should have been keeping track of this damage. I thought I had a few more rounds of this. You know, she did not use the laser on me a single time in that in the fight that I actually finished on.
Interesting. It's funny how that works sometimes.
Yeah,
I like the balance I struck with my party, because I was trying to think, like, I was planning it like I was planning an MMO party, actually, because I wanted to have there be a tank character, 2 damage characters, and then a healer. I ended up going into the final fight with a dragoon, a ninja. And I can't remember what the other guy was.
Dark Knight and Black Belt.
My Black Belt and my Devout. Actually, so of the tanky characters, the one who actually was the most damage resistant was actually the Dragoon. But still, basically, that's kind of how it was, and they worked out fine. The only somewhat trouble I had was killing the second tentacle, who was resistant to physical attacks. But honestly, I didn't bother, because all he did was use bad breath, and I had 4 ribbons. So it's like, okay, I don't need to kill you.
Right.
They cast protect and haste. Who cares?
Yeah.
Aegis shields and ribbons are your friend.
Yep. Also, haste is interesting because beyond a certain point, it's actually kind of useless. Because it doesn't effectively increase your total damage. Because there is a... The way that it calculates your extra attacks after a certain point, haste just doesn't contribute enough.
Right.
It's still doing something, but it's not the outright doubling that it was in Final Fantasy. And then they completely changed how it works once the active time battle came in, and it actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does. It makes a lot more sense with the active time battle.
So it's not as useful as slow, because you only have to cast slow once.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, that's real quick where we're at with Final Fantasy III. We're all completed. We will be recording the next episode in the retrospective series, hopefully next week, and we will have it up for you the following week, so... looking forward to doing that. Just for shits and giggles, how far are you guys into Final Fantasy IV?
So
I have sorry, go ahead, man.
Yeah. To keep this as spoiler free as possible, there's two dungeons that everyone who's played the game will know the two that I'm talking about that have damaged floors.
Yeah.
That you have to cast float to get through without taking damage. Yep. I've cleared out one of those, but I need to come back with a frying pan, and I'm about to do the other one. And then I'm going to go lose a party member again.
Yep.
So that should tell everybody exactly where I am.
How about you, JT?
I just finished the Fabul fight, and now Cecil is on his own, about to go into Mysidia.
Excellent. I will be picking up Final Fantasy IV very shortly. So, looking forward to playing that. Lex, can we drag you into playing Final Fantasy IV?
When are we starting Final Fantasy IV?
I will officially start Final Fantasy IV after we do the podcast for the retrospective series. Like I said, we'll probably record that next week.
I'll probably already be done.
We'll officially start then. I'm probably...
Ooh, I know. I definitely have to finish it before we officially start. Then I'm gonna keep these are thromuses. I've got to keep my thromuses.
If you don't want to, Lex, I understand. I know you want to join us for Final Fantasy V, though. So
I do want to join you guys. It's just that 4 is not my favorite, and
that's why I want to drag you into it.
I know. I kind of want to do it. Because I haven't actually played 4 for about 10 years, so I'll do it.
Excellent. I will let you, I'll give you the official heads up after we get the podcast, the next retrospective podcast up.
Yeah, just let me know. I've got all of them on my PSP anyway, so.
Excellent. I will definitely do that. Excellent.
The PSP version is a really good version of 4 to play through. Just ignore that whole interlude and after years thing.
Yeah.
I think that was a glitch.
Okay, so with news and notes out of the way, I really thought it would be fun for us to dig in, just spend a whole episode responding to listener feedback. There is some very interesting questions floating out there that I felt like deserved us to devote some time to responding to. So we will open up by taking a look at some YouTube comments from or regarding episode 11 of the podcast. Let's go to the live stream forums.
Lex, why don't you read mine?
I mean, I read this earlier and I was like, what are you talking about? Because I don't remember, like, episode 11 was a long time ago, guys. Come on now. Like, I don't remember what I said.
There's
about
a reason why you mentioned we do these. It's so we can get rid of our friggin' backlog.
I know, right? Your comment was something akin to... FF6, you realized that objectively it was an amazing game, but you didn't personally care for it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so this prompted my response.
All right. So you're saying, I get it, personal preference. Yeah, I just don't. I'm not a massive fan of Six. I'm just not. I think the characters suffer because there's too many of them.
I will give you that. It's nowhere near Chrono Cross's problem, but I think Setzer, Umaru, Mog, and I'm blanking on his name. The grandfather get a very short shrift.
Strago.
Strago, yes.
What about them?
They just do not. Exactly. What about them?
Yeah,
we
spend
nothing.
No time with them at all.
I think that's a dangerous road to go down because you're going to have people who are like, I disagree. I think these characters are more useless. We actually have a thread on this.
This has nothing to do with their use in battle.
No.
Strago's a motherfucking baller in battle.
In terms of story, because that really, when it boils down to FF, the story is the most important thing.
Yeah.
I think their characterizations suffer. We get a lot on Terra. We get a lot on Celeste. Okay. FF pronunciations. Celeste. Say it again.
Celis. Celis.
Sounds like I'm fucking saying celery. I don't like it. So
just pronounce it however you want, Lex.
Yeah, I just say it Celis Chere, so it sounds vaguely French to me.
Oh, God. The thing about Six is that it gives us a shitload of interesting characters and doesn't do enough with most of them. That's my problem with it.
I mean, for the story that we do get and for the character development that we get for Final Fantasy VI, I guess I'm still madly in love with it. There are so many things to love about Final Fantasy VI.
I completely understand. I remember the first time I played through that game and I was like, oh, this is cool. And the one thing I found kind of off-putting, which is refreshing when it comes to an FF game, don't get me wrong, is that they're like, I said this last time, there's no main character, and then you could argue that it switches halfway through, which is fine. But I just remember being in lock shoes and going, okay, this is my main guy, I'm just running about my main guy, and then it switches, and I was like, okay. So I assume we'll go back to lock at some point, and then it never did, and I was like, okay. No, I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
Gogo was the main character, and he got shafted.
I'm not saying that it doesn't. The game doesn't really need a main character.
No, it doesn't.
Because of the overall narrative and how everything fits together, and it's really cool, and it's an awesome game. It's really well put together, but it's just not. It's definitely not my favourite. I would argue the best in the franchise, objectively, is Final Fantasy IX, but that's not my personal favourite either.
But we all know what your personal favourite is, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You and your Mystic Quest lusts.
I was blinded by love and then later by scorpion venom.
Well, that's because you attacked while the tail was up.
Ryu, you want to tackle Tetsujin's?
I hope they don't revisit a medieval type of setting anytime soon. It's the most unimaginative scenario, in my opinion. I'd personally like to see them surprise us. Some kind of out-of-left-field setting that makes you go, that's damn awesome. I never even thought of that. Also, agree with Lex
like
about...
maybe a school?
Also, agree with Lex about character interaction and shit being important. To me, a story can get away with not being too original as long as the characters still draw me in.
Cough,
and you know
what would
be really out of
cough.
Left field? If they set it in the real world. You know, like that movie nobody liked and that game they never released.
Well, isn't that essentially what they're trying to do with Final Fantasy 15 too?
Yeah.
I mean, it's even though it's not technically set on Earth, I think that was the original intention, wasn't it?
That was literally the original intention. It was still Versus, was that it took place on Earth.
Right.
No, it wasn't ever. It wasn't ever supposed to be Earth because I've been on a 15 binge.
Something that was functionally identical to Earth, I should say.
Just run down the reason I've recently played through Dusky, is because I've been on a 15 binge because I decided to rehype myself for the game. So I went through and rewatched all the old trailers, reread all the old interviews. And from the very beginning, Nomura said that, what is the name of the starting city? I should probably know this. We have Altissia, it's not that. We have Solheim, it's not that. We have Niflheim, it's not that. Does nobody know the name of that city? Noctis's city, anyway, is supposed to be like a version of Tokyo. That's where all the fantasy based on reality stuff comes in. It looks like Tokyo, and it really does. Even now, it still looks like Tokyo.
In the first few trailers, people thought that it was literally just Tokyo because it was so. I think they just modeled a real building and a real street and said, here, monsters run wild.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, Yop wrote to us, to be frank, the futuristic swords and magic with lasers has been done to death, probably even more so than the medieval type, which in Final Fantasy VI and XII was more of a steampunky medieval anyway, less so in Final Fantasy IX.
I think he might have made a mistake there. Or not, I don't know. I mean, I agree with that, though. I know Tet said that he hopes they don't revisit a medieval type setting anytime soon, but if we examine what we've had for the past few games, ignore 12, do you know what I mean? Like, the vast majority of them have been quite futuristic.
Agreed. Even 12 was futuristic.
Yeah.
It was.
I mean, they had like spaceshipy things.
It was just high fantasy futuristic.
Yeah.
Or Star Wars futuristic.
Well, it was Star Wars the not 40K. If you get my reference there.
Are you? Well, never mind.
Well, no, it's basically the Warhammer version of Star
Wars. That's exactly what I thought you were saying.
40K version.
Yeah.
And then it does have its own grim, dark future where there is only war, and that's tactics. And then later, even worse, there's Marsh.
Personally, for a future Final Fantasy game, I do think seeing something set in medieval would be the way that I personally would like to see it go. But I will say this. What about what Carly writes here? Ignoring the fact that she says, again, space.
You didn't pronounce that correctly. It's
space. Yeah. Ignoring the fact that she says that, she says, but seriously, a mix of Imperial China and Feudal Japan would be awesome. I'd be in for that. I mean, if they're not going to do a medieval setting, I think doing Imperial China or a Feudal Japan setting would be really cool.
I don't think...
They would still be technically medieval, but... Enough of that. Interestingly, though, we've gotten that already, but we've only gotten it as 10. Brief snippets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's...
And a little bit of Wutai.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Wutai is more explicitly of... that.
Go on.
I was thinking of a lot of the culture, but I can see what you're talking about, how Tin has those mixed in.
One of the things, I've said this in a podcast before, so do I bore anyone by repeating myself too much, but one of the things that is so visually appealing, and one of the things they said in the development of 10 is that they really wanted to blend in some Asian cultures to the design and style of 10. 10
is absolutely Okinawan.
Yes, and I think they should just take that one step further and just use the entire setting.
Agreed. Totally agreed. And, you know, I was jesting about throwing out Carly's suggestion about Final Fantasy in space. I think it could work. It has to be done correctly, though. It could so easily end up turning into just a complete clusterfuck of a mess.
Did you say Xenosaga?
Yeah. I feel like Star Ocean is already Final Fantasy in space, to be honest.
It really is. And Xenosaga, when it's good, and Xenoblade are both very good contenders for RPG in space!
Star Ocean, I've played the second story, and I've played till the end of time, and both are very, that's a very good description, because they are Final Fantasy. There is space in it, but for the majority of second story and for about half of Till the End of Time, you're actually in a medieval setting,
fighting and you don't
swords
know.
And all that good stuff with the... Well, at least you've got the active battle, which, I mean, the battle system in Star Wars is just amazing. I love it to death. I would love to see them do a Final Fantasy with that kind of battle system. It's a nice mix between turn-based in a arena and actually
I'll
fighting.
Be honest.
But aside from that...
I'll be 100% honest. I got stuck in that tutorial room at the start of Star Ocean 3, like, and 4. I got stuck. And I was like, I don't know what they want me to do. What button do I press? I need to do what? A what back? How do I do this? At what point do I press this button? It took me so long to learn that battle system, but it's so rewarding and fun.
I've never played any of those games.
Recommended, Vader. And to be honest, I've only actually played from start to finish Star Ocean 3. Till the End of Time. Is that one? For the PS2?
Are those games something that I can get on the PlayStation Network?
The first two are. I don't know about 3.
I don't think you can get 3.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I would have it, to be honest.
I'll definitely check them out.
I mean,
it probably won't be able to check them out till after we finish the retrospective, so it may be a year or so down the road, but I will definitely put them on the list to check out.
3
so.
Is very likely coming out for PS4.
Yes, okay. You can get both of the first two on PSP, either as a remake or an e-boot.
Right on. Moving on from that, going into some YouTube comments that we got regarding the PSX minicast that we did, mainly about the Final Fantasy VII remake that they announced at PlayStation Experience. We went over some of these remarks in the last episode, and we actually started to go over one remark in particular. I decided to go ahead and strike that from the last episode because I really felt like it deserved a much more in-depth conversation. Mainly this remark from Andy McStab. JT, you haven't read one yet. Why don't you go ahead and read this one?
Disagree about Barrett's voice. It should be a lot more rambunctious. There is nothing racist in his character. What has skin color got to do with anything? What? Stereotype, therefore, racist? Come on. Are we going to ban any image of Asians eating noodles or British drinking tea? Barrett needs to have this... clumsy, boisterous character. He's going to be shallow without it.
Yes. So, this is a very interesting issue that he does bring up. We did speak about this on the minicast. The conversation actually began with me making a remark that I felt like Barrett's character, the way that it's written and the way that it comes across in the original version of Final Fantasy VII is it's very stereotypical. And it's very much Mr. T, as Ryu likes to put it.
So that is largely a localization affectation.
It's true, though.
So, yes, it is.
Yeah,
I don't think we were outwardly trying to call it racist. I was just saying it was very heavily stereotyped, and it's true. It is extremely heavily stereotyped. I don't know how they pull that off with a voice-acted cast without offending people.
In 2016?
Yes,
with a voice-acted
exactly.
cast with this character that they've always... Although FF7 has its lighter moments, they've always tried to go for a kind of darker, more realistic feel. Even when we had LEGO characters, that is what they were going for. So... it's hard to do that with a character. If Barrett was to say all of his lines exactly the way they read from the original Final Fantasy VII, I don't think they would read. I don't think it would be right. I just don't think it would fit in well with the overall tone of the game. And I think everyone's judging it a little bit too early because we've seen one line from Barrett.
Agreed.
So.
And if they get his old VA back, I think it's or the Advent Children VA, I think he'll do just fine.
I mean, I do not have a problem with him seemingly being toned down in that particular scene, because I mean, and those two scenes were exactly what he said in the original game anyway. So why do people need him to kind of be hopping around shouting expletives for it to be Barrett? Do you know what I mean?
Has a lot more swearing than it actually does.
The game has like zero swearing. I think a character says bastard, a character says shit, well, Tifa says retard once. I think that's it.
It is, but I was listening to another podcast and somebody talked about how Barrett ended every line with mofo and Sid had entire lines that were censored out. And I'm like, no, that is not the case at all. So
there is a couple of sequences with Sid when he's talking about Shara that he drops several censored out words.
Oh yeah, but it's never sequences.
Right. Yeah.
There was no crying koala in Final Fantasy VII.
No, I mean, like I said, I think the voice actor from Advent Children would suit this fine, and he doesn't have to do it in or deliver Barrett's lines in the heavily stereotyped way that they're written. I think if you did do it the way that they're written, I think the internet fanboy outrage would just be astronomical.
The internet outrage is going to be astronomical no matter what. It's current year. People get offended by everything.
Yes.
But, you know, they don't need to make him sound exactly like Mr. T.
Yes. Agreed.
That's just what people assumed based on, I think, the one use of fool early in the game.
Well, no, it's not just that. It's the dialect that he's written in.
Oh, no, he definitely has a dialect, but people always seem to imitate him as sounding very much like, well, specifically B.A. Baracus.
He resembles B.A. Baracus.
He actually doesn't all that. He definitely resembles Mr. T, but not B.A. Baracus.
I know
that's going to sound odd, but
from the
because he doesn't
Lex.
Have a specific look that B.A. Baracus does.
But he B.A. Baracus was Mr. T's character in the A-Team, Lex, if you
BA
ever watched
stood
that.
For badass.
Ah, right, okay. So now I know where that comes from.
Yeah.
See, this is where we need the soundboard, so I can insert that. Right about now.
Also, hilarious notes for anybody playing at home. The original Howling Mad Murphy was on Star Trek The Next Generation as Barclay, the crazy recluse, and the guy who played Face was on Battlestar Galactica as the original Starbuck. I was calling him Lone Star for a second, and that was hilarious.
Oh, now there's an extended reference.
Have you guys seen the image that's been going around the internet that's episode 8 spoilers? These are Rey's parents, and it's a picture of Lone Star and Princess Vespa.
Yeah, I have seen that. That's tremendous. Yes. It's tremendous. Internet for the win on that one. So,
amen.
So, yeah, real quick back to Andy's comment about Barrett needing to be rambunctious and have a kind of a clumsy, boisterous character. I think there's a way to do that without sounding so stereotypical.
Yes, I
agree with you. So I have a long spiel to go on in a minute, but go ahead.
I'm done. Go ahead.
Basically, I think a lot of the resistance to this is the belief that, and this is a common thing in our society now, it's because there's definitely people who want to make everything happy and friendly and nobody gets offended anywhere, and there's definitely that demographic, but I feel like anytime somebody does anything to develop a character, to remake a character, to change a character, to, in Barrett's case, arguably evolve a character beyond a stereotype, everybody automatically goes, oh, you're just doing it to please the PC crowd. And I don't really get that from Barrett. I get that. I mean, he was not as obnoxious, for lack of a better word, in even Advent Children. And nobody was complaining about this being, oh, you're just pleasing the PC at that time. I feel like this is just because, you know, again, it's 2016 and this is the thing to do. Oh my God, he is not exactly like we remember him. This must be the liberals' fault. No, it's, I think you're worrying about nothing.
Yep, I'm in complete agreement with you, JT. Complete.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so moving on to responses to episode 12. via YouTube, Brandon says, Breath of Fire. Yes, that was the name of it. Ha ha ha. Thanks for reading my story. A little interesting side note. Unger Max is one of the typos in the game for anyone here who hasn't heard that. It was supposed to be called Anger Max, but among other names, it was changed in translation. So Brandon's actually referring to episode 12 in which we were reading everybody's favorite holiday Final Fantasy related memories. And I believe he misspoke about which game he was talking about, and Ryu corrected him. So
it was not a major thing. He just was obviously referencing one series and he spoke using another series
yeah.
name.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
also, to be very perfectly pedantic, you have misspelled Ungar Max. It's with an A, not an E.
Now, look here. We only need one pedantic person on the live stream, okay? One.
Why do you think I've been letting and other people take that award from me? That award was made for me. I had, like, the first 3 years of it.
Okay. Let's take a look at the responses for episode 12 from the live stream forums, actually. We did get one from Tetsujin. Lex, your turn.
In response to JT, who is Jason Tandro, and my Christmas soundtrack story, definitely not the soundtrack to Airgaze. I recall it sounded like Super Nintendo music, and I have played Airgaze at some point. I don't even know where this soundtrack is anymore. And yes, I should have added that Mystic Quest is not to be confused with the SNES game Final Fantasy Mystic Quest, which is actually a Mystic Quest legend in Europe. Also, Dat Gollum impression.
We thanks is you, Gollum, Gollum.
Oh, God.
I was quite proud of that, considering it was off the cuff and all that good junk. I live to please, Tets, what can I say?
That's what his customers say back behind the dumpsters.
Oh, God.
Hey, I'll have you know it's the restroom at a 7-Eleven.
And there we've officially gone to After Dark.
Whoa. Huh. My goodness. Tetsu would be, I would be interested to finding out what the soundtrack was that you actually did have. So if you do happen to figure it out at some point, you have to respond to us and let us know.
If you ever find it, like, upload it, and we probably have a good chance of knowing where the hell it's from.
it's
and something else, put it on YouTube and somebody
my
will know.
Was on Bahamut Lagoon. Just since you said it sounded like Super Nintendo and you've never heard it before, and that has some pretty good music, but it was never released over here.
Well, with the encyclopedic knowledge of Ryu and JT, I can't imagine that we wouldn't be able to get to the bottom of it, so.
Getting to the bottom of it is also what I said to the customer in the living
bathroom. Oh, boy. Okay. moving on to our comments regarding the last episode we put up here for episode 13, which was, of course, our Star Wars and Final Fantasy. we'll open up here with Boba Fett's remark here. Ryu, you want to go ahead and tackle this one?
All right. For Star Wars influences, I'd say Terra is more of a Luke Skywalker than Van Bosch.
She is the Returner's only hope, thanks to her superhuman abilities. Ramu, for that matter, plays a more of a Yoda role in the narrative than anyone else. He is one of the last Jedi that escaped the Empire at the time, helps Terra control her powers, then dies of age and or exhaustion. More of a stretch. But I'd also offer Palom and Porom as the same comedic sideshow to the story that C-3PO and R2-D2 were. In terms of stature, lethality, and potty mouth, Palom is R2 verbatim, and Porom is 3PO. That gets the respect he deserves because people can actually understand R2, though Porom is obviously still more competent. My hopes for the new year is just that 15 makes it this year.
Well, I think you're going to get your wish as far as that's concerned, so you don't got to worry about that piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, good call on the Palom and Porom thing. I hadn't really thought about them being 3PO and R2-D2. They kind of do have some comedic moments.
They are the Laurel amongst Hardy.
Each other. Yeah, for sure.
And so are R2 and 3PO. They're literally the Laurel and Hardy. Which makes you wonder, what's BB-8? Is he a Harpo Marx?
I don't even know how to respond to that. the comment about Tara being more of Luke Skywalker than Vaughn or Bosch. I see that. I could totally see that.
Especially once you give her the Atmo weapon.
Well, and especially given the fact that Vaughn really has nothing to do with his own story, but Luke does, so...
Luke gets something to do with the story later on, but Vaughn is very much sort of the Luke at the very start of the game.
Vaughn has a story, his story just does not coincide with the actual plot of the game.
his story is in the sequel.
Good call, Lex.
I'm not even joking. He does actually get a proper story, but you have to go into the real-time strategy and the tactics games to see some of it.
Oh, God.
It's like, why wasn't this shit in the original?
Maybe Vaughn just wanted to go to Bajir with some Magisek and Rudders.
Yeah.
JT?
Hey, that's Tara's parents you're talking about.
JT, you want to read this remark from Starling?
I've heard so many people compare Kingdom Hearts BBS, which is sleep for those of you who don't know the 15 million fucking Kingdom Hearts games, to Star Wars. 15 million and 2, yes. 15 million and 2.8.
Yeah.
Fuck.
To Star Wars in terms of general plot, that I'm surprised it didn't come up in your discussion. The comparisons were largely focused on Tara's part, of course, with Xehanort, Palpatine, Erequest being Obi-Wan, and Tara as Anakin. I figure that probably makes Yen Sin Yoda. Also, I think it's worth mentioning, I've seen a Final Fantasy VII Star Wars crossover where the life stream and the Force are one and the same.
That another thing I'd like to share my thoughts on.
Yeah, I think I actually saw that in the thing where I kind of said they're very similar, but idealistic if not in execution. Another thing I'd like to share in my thoughts is a bit about Cloud killing Aerith instead of Sephiroth doing it. Aside from such a change being unwelcome and unnecessary in a remake, I feel that Cloud being able to keep Sephiroth from making him kill Aerith is a meaningful detail meant to show that even in the state he was in around the time, Sephiroth couldn't just force Cloud to do whatever he wants without the slightest resistance. Sephiroth had to put effort into manipulating Cloud in a way that would actually work, which, along with wanting to torment Cloud from killing him in Nibelheim, is why he got out of his way to do stuff like that. I also agree that tackling on more guilt symbolism for the Buster Sword would be redundant and heavy-handed, which, yes to all that.
I mean, it already has guilt symbolism because I fucking lived. That's all that you need.
Totally. And to the Kingdom Hearts reference, I mean, we didn't even tackle Star Wars and Kingdom Hearts at all. But you definitely...
Or how it's going to be in the next Kingdom Hearts game, because it's a Disney property.
For sure. I just hope the mouse doesn't infect it too bad.
I mean, we can just hope that, you know, eventually it will infect the mouse.
Hey, the rats killed 2/3 of Europe back in the day. I'm sure they can wipe off 2/3 of the Star Wars franchise.
Oh, they already did, actually. That's what the EU was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So on the whole, I think it's good.
And I'm still butthurt about that. So but good job, JT. No, thanks for reopening that wound.
There needed to be a lot that was culled, and they're in legend status. They can bring that shit back at any time. But we needed the shit from the post-Vong writing era gone. And Crystal Star, that was also really stupid.
That is a fan-fucking-with move on par with some of the stuff that Nintendo and even Squeenix does to, like, Let's Players and creative arts people. Like, if you want to do any kind of fan project for those things, forget it. You will get a C&D, which is, again, something I am wholeheartedly against. I believe in protecting your own intellectual property, yes, but when you have to wipe shit out to do it, and this isn't like fan works. The EU was officially, Lucas, for what it's worth, said this is all officially canon, and then they were like, doesn't work with the mouse, bye-bye.
Well, Lucas had a system in place to go, okay, that's real, that's real, that part isn't real, that's stupid, that's really stupid, don't even touch that shit, and holiday special. So I can't really blame the mouse for going, you know what, we're shoving you all, and we're just gonna take you at our leisure.
Yeah, anyway, that's a discussion for another time.
And don't get me wrong, there's shit in the EU that I'm sad to see go, but that is counterbalanced by the stuff that I am glad to be rid of.
Mara Jade.
I'm sad to see her go.
That's all I'm going to say. Yes, Mara Jade.
But she's technically in the movies, so we don't have to care.
And Grand Admiral Thrawn. And I'll let that go. Yeah. Okay.
I should check and see if Shadows is still canon. It should be.
If they've taken Shadows out of being canon, I'm going to be pissed. Because they even did a soundtrack for that fucking book. Yeah.
That book, game, audio drama.
Yeah.
Comic book.
Even though the game was a fucking mess.
Oh, yeah.
It was still fun to play.
It was a glorious mess. And Dash Rendar is the most canon hero ever. And everything he says is the truth. Oh, and also he was in several other video games, too. They referenced the shit out of Shadows of the Empire at the time.
There's also this really clever remark here from Ryushikaze. You know what series is really full of Star Wars nods? Knights of the Old Republic. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And then JT chimes in.
Podracer has a few of them, too.
I genuinely like Podracer.
I did, too.
Podracer was an amazingly fun game. It was the best thing to come out of the prequel trilogy, bar none.
I don't want to say that, but it was definitely the best thing to come out of episode one.
Lex, did you play Knights of the Old Republic or Podracer?
I have Knights of the Old Republic. I haven't actually played it yet.
Oh, you should.
I got it in a Steam sale for £1. So,
holy shit.
£1 really, very well spent.
£1 very well spent.
Yeah, for Carly sure.
Made me go, buy it. Go and find a couple mods. There's a couple quality of life depends. Mods that what? Have been created since then that fix a lot of bugs. Install those, start playing it. Like,
for sure.
Not even wait to this podcast. Do it now. Yeah. Once you start playing it, we will end this podcast. We will fade out to you starting it up.
Okay. Our last remark comes from Tosh. And Lex, you want to read this one?
Tosh Asodis says, wait a minute. Since when did it sound like a good idea to cross over Star Wars and Final Fantasy together? No offense, but that sounds more like a death sentence to both franchises if you ask me. Disney and Final Fantasy crossover, I can easily cope, because it made such cool ideas even outside Kingdom Hearts, the ultimate Disney and Final Fantasy crossover. The next crossover with Final Fantasy I'd like to see is with Pokemon, because both franchises have similar gameplays and similar new stories in each title, except for the compilation of FF7, FF4, two sequels, FF12, and the Lightning Trilogy and characters. But just adding Star Wars or anything else for that matter, except for Sailor Moon and card captors, I could tolerate. It's just a bit too much as far as I can see. So, that's a little bit incoherent to me.
I see the worm wriggling on the line, and I choose not to respond.
So, I just want to start, first of all, I gotta ask, did you listen to the episode? Because we actually weren't suggesting a crossover of Star Wars and Final Fantasy at all.
We're talking about the premise homages? Of the episode.
And yes, exactly. Particularly
the fact
in Final
that
Fantasy
the Star
12.
Wars series was a huge influence on Final Fantasy, and they're huge fanboys of it. To the point of literally remaking it as one of their games.
Yeah, I mean, I think you misconstrued what the episode was actually about. We in no way were insinuating that Final Fantasy and Star Wars should cross over. We just were taking a look at the way that Star Wars very obviously had an influence on the Final Fantasy series. As far as Final Fantasy crossing over with Pokemon, no. Just no.
It kind of did that already, if you look at Final Fantasy 13.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say that. Well, aren't they in one of these new portable games supposed to be something similar to that too? Some of that premise.
Where you capture and use various people and do them sort of capsule style. The one whose name I've forgotten, where you can switch between looking real and chibi.
Yeah, I can't remember what it's
called.
World of Final Fantasy. Yes.
Yes, there it is. Yeah.
The thing that I swore for, I swear to God, when it first came out, I thought it was a troll to off-put us to reveal the actual game, which was the remake. And then, nope, it's a real thing. Okay.
But then also remake, so.
What do you guys think about Star Wars crossing over with Kingdom Hearts?
I mean, it went into friggin' Tron.
It already has some stuff in there.
It's gone into to weirder stuff. It's gone into Nightmare on Christmas. It's gone into friggin' Pirates of the Caribbean. I think Star Wars actually makes a lot more thematic sense than Pirates did.
They not already said that they're not doing it, or have I just? Because I was pretty sure there was.
I don't remember seeing anything official about it.
I don't think they've never had a official statement about it, which I think is sort of a good way to say they're probably not going to do it, because they'd be hyping the crap out of it if they were.
I think Nomura said at some point, though, that it was like the tone of it might not be right for the game. I'm going to have to double check through interviews or whatever, but I'm pretty sure it's in the Kingdom Hearts 3 thread somewhere, or maybe it was just discussions that we were having and I've misconstrued it, I have no idea. But there's no official word on it.
I'm not sure how the tone of Star Wars is wrong for Kingdom Hearts 3 when Pirates. Oh well.
Hey, Pirates was freaking amazing. That world was awesome. Just gonna say.
I'm not knocking the world. I'm talking about the tonal shift.
Fair point. Yeah, because I mean, even with like them being like trying to go as realistic as the PS2 can get them to look, was completely different from everything else in cartoon. I will admit that was completely
It was a
like,
very visual
off.
Tonal shift and a very different story than they'd been doing otherwise, because, you know, that was, oh no, I've been stabbed. Oh, you know. It was very much, he was shot and stabbed, and, you know, it didn't count because he was a skeleton at the time, but still, that was a lot more hardcore than any of the other worlds.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Kingdom Hearts is quite convoluted enough. I don't want Star Wars wrapped up in that mess.
Adding Sailor Moon and Cardcaptors to Final Fantasy, again, thematically, extremely strange. Besides, she and Cecil would have to fight forever about who was properly the real Princess of the Moon, and that would not go well.
Yeah, I find a lot of the anime references in here a touch odd that they would work. I mean, one thing, I'm only vaguely familiar with Cardcaptor Sakura. My sister read a couple of the mangas in the day. From what I gathered, the art style is actually kind of similar, but I don't know. It's I wouldn't see it in a Final Fantasy world, and Sailor Moon either. Sailor Moon is just they have nothing belonging there. At least with Star Wars, again, we can see thematic elements, and Final Fantasy did enjoy making references to Star Wars. And your comment about Pokemon and Final Fantasy having similar battle styles, yes, in the sense that they're turn-based combat, but that's pretty much the only one.
And because Final Fantasy isn't really even turn-based anymore and hasn't been properly turn-based since 4. It's had a variation of the active or chronological time system ever since.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's close in theme to actually one of the ones you dismissed. Like I said, there's elements of that monster raising and using in Final Fantasy 13 too. And as far as like a straight turn-based combat with like limited move sets, you could argue that like I guess 3 in a way, but again, people say like turn-based combat, any of those games are very much like Final Fantasy when there's very clear defining points that separate your, say, Final Fantasies from your Chrono Triggers and stuff like that. So
besides, Square Enix already has a series that's much closer to Pokemon than Final Fantasy, and that is the Dragon Quest Monsters series.
Never played it, never was interested in
it. It's essentially a Pokemon rival. It was made to compete with Pokemon.
Hey, let's not forget the amazing Digimon game from PlayStation 1. That was the shit. And I remember watching
the Monster... Shits?
That was the shit. Tuh. Singular.
A lot of the Digimon games were terrible, though.
A lot of Digimon was terrible.
Yeah. There's some really good stuff in there. And then there's the why did you do that?
I say this as someone who likes Digimon a lot more than Pokemon, and the anime-wise. Like,
okay, the anime for Pokemon... I think, at the very least, it should have stopped being about Ash around the black and white era, but it's never going to not be about Ash.
Well, I liked it when it was similar to the game, and they actually kind of followed the story, and then they went off and did all this other shit, and I'm just like, I don't have the end to care about this
anymore.
Okay,
I think we're super off topic.
You're very off topic.
One thing...
When are we off topic?
I know, but one thing...
And this is the end of the
podcast. One thing I really want to say is that if anyone is a fan of Pokemon... what you just said, JT, about how it was good when it was close to the original, go and watch the Pokemon Origins anime, which is a 4-episode special.
Yes, the Pokemon Origins anime is good, and the Pokemon special manga is excellent.
It was a 4-episode special that was released a couple of years ago, or 5 years ago now, to celebrate the 15th anniversary of Pokemon. This year is the 20th, and it is excellent. It's only 4 episodes of anime. You can find most of it on YouTube, I think, and it's the first game. It's excellent. It's just really well done. Recommend.
And we're not way off topic anyway, since Tosh did bring up Pokemon, so we're okay.
Yeah. I will say, like I said, I played Digimon World, the PS1 game. That was awesome. But I also heard vaguely about Monster Rancher. Any of y'all see that growing up, the anime?
Yes, and Monster Rancher was not a good series, but it had heart. The anime specifically, just because it never really quite knew what it was up to. The games were very interesting in that they were very much more about raising the animals, like, you know, you were a rancher, and then going to the tournaments, as opposed to, I'm gonna be the very best, get the team wander around. Like, there was still the battling in it, but it was more like being a dog breeder and going to the Westminster. If you get my meaning.
Yeah. I don't give two fucks. And by the way, JT, I love your remark about did any of you see that when you were growing up? I was probably already grown up when that came out. So thanks again for making me feel old, you son of a bitch.
Well, okay, let's talk about the swinging 20s then. Maybe that will finally make you feel young.
tell us about the rise of Raikon.
Tell
us about Prohibition, Grandpa.
I haven't enough middle fingers for you guys
right
now.
We didn't have that, America, in your sober years.
We didn't have sober years. We had Prohibition. We did not have sober years.
God, how did we get to talking about the fucking Prohibition? What the hell?
I'm in the podcast.
So
and
now
I'm...
we are officially way off topic.
I was drunk.
Okay. So, that said, that is all of the feedback. We finally got through it all. I promised you guys that we were going to get to all the fan feedback here, or the listener feedback, I should say. So, thank you all very, very, very much for sending in your feedback, your comments, your remarks, your disagreements. It really is a pleasure reading all this, and it's a source of pride that you guys feel like you want to write into us and have us discuss some of your ideas and such. So thank you very, very much, and please keep the comments coming.
It might take us a month to get to them, but we will get them.
Absolutely. We may have to do another one of these episodes if we get a flood of feedback again. So not that I'm opposed to doing that. I thought this was kind of fun. So that said, I do have a question for the listenership. How do you feel about Lightning crossing over into the fashion
and
realm?
And does she wear as good as Jolene Kujo wore Gucci? Leave your responses in the podcast.
Yeah, please do. We do want to hear from you, so please send your questions and feedback to us at lifestreampod@gmail.com. You can also reply to the episode posts each week on the lifestream.net forums. Please also leave us feedback on iTunes. I've been begging for this for weeks and weeks and weeks, and we still only have one piece of feedback. So please do leave your feedback on iTunes. It helps us get noticed and helps move the podcast up in the rankings in iTunes. So please do so. And we will do our best, as always, to read your questions, comments, and feedback on the air. And it sounds like JT's daughter is leaving us some negative feedback.
That's
so,
good feedback.
She's leaving negative feedback in her diaper.
Oh. So she's contributing.
Kyra, you
want to
say goodbye
podcast.
To the folks? You want to say goodbye? Of course, now you're silent. she's not a show lady. She's a total ham in person, but she can't do radio.
She's a queen of the stage of the old and the boards.
Okay, funniest thing I hear. The sound I just heard was her clapping. That was funny as hell.
All right, so with that said, we would like to thank you again for listening to the Lifestream Final Fantasy podcast. Take care and always protect the crystals.
Unless your name is Marsh, so break those shit. Break that shit as fast as you can.
Music featured on this episode is courtesy of incompetech.com.